What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Let's Dig Into That podcast, where we share our shit to shake the shame. What is Let's Dig Into That? Let's Dig Into That is a proclamation, a calling to connect. Our mission is to remain honest and curious to promote intentional connection through meaningful conversations. I'm here today to have that conversation with my favorite philanthropist, my favorite activist, and my favorite writer, and she just happens to be my wife. What is up, Jordan?
Thank you for sitting here with me today.
Of course.
Yes, my honey, it is an honor. JT brings the depth and emotional intelligence to the conversation.
Too sweet.
Yeah, I am the firecracker in his wit, wisdom, and charm as we dig into it today. I am honored to be sitting here with you.
No, the pleasure is mine. I want to try something today.
Okay.
I'm going to read you a famous quote. And you know me pretty well. I want you to do two things. Of course, I want you to connect and tell me how it makes you feel. And that'll gear us in our path for this conversation. But, little game, I want you to see if you can tell me who it is.
I love that we're starting with a game.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm supposed to tell you who it is and then how it makes you feel?
No, how it makes you feel.
Make me feel. Okay.
Sound good?
I'm ready.
All righty. Hope and fear cannot occupy the same space. Invite one to stay. Can I give you a hint? This is...
Yes.
Okay. She...
Love it.
...is an American poet like me and an activist like you.
Ooh. Hope and fear cannot occupy
the same space.
Ooh. Is that Miss Maya?
Sure is.
Ooh. I love it. Okay. Okay. This is going to be a great day. Maya Angelou. That's really amazing. Invite one to stay. Because it is... Fear is a demon sometimes.
Oh, big time.
And hope takes some endurance training. And so that's such succinct wisdom, those little clarity bombs.
Yep.
I love it. Okay. So, yes. So, hope and fear. Happy election season.
Oh, wow. I didn't even connect that, but yeah. So how does that make you feel? Like when you think about, here's a more clear question. Have you ever made a choice that you would do differently if you had the opportunity to go back and you know you made that decision because fear swayed you that way?
Absolutely. I'm sure there is a multitude because that is to get to where you want to go, that challenge, that hurdle of the fear feels like such a part of that journey.
Right.
And so I think circling back to Maya, that's why I love her word choice of invite one to stay, because it is a reminder that you are in that power position of, yeah, they will overtake you if you let it. And so, but it has to be that conscious choice and awareness to keep pushing through. So in my own life, I have a tendency to justify the shit out of everything. And so if something were to not go my way, I'm like, oh yeah, that's how I planned it the whole time. And so I struggle with that. Like I think about some big milestone moments where it's like where you go to college and things like that. And I'm like, man, all of the magical things that happened because I made that choice, it's really hard to go back. But confession time, one that comes to mind, I was on the top of a mountain. You know this already, married once before, but my partner, who I love deeply, still care about, we unfortunately don't communicate, but all healthy, happy, peace in the abyss.
You rocked a divorce.
I rocked a divorce. and I feel very fortunate to say that, but in that moment, we'd been together 5 years, he popped the question, and it was, we're in this, but I knew that commitment. And so my response was, what about a couple years, make a long engagement? And his response to that was no, which I get because I'm an irresistible love nugget.
Probably his fear.
Yeah, his fear acting. Yeah, but I think that the fact that we're divorced now, I let the fear win perhaps. And so that is another partner and might
it's
be a
pretty
little
massive
bit of
life choice to be making. Who you're going to spend your life with?
Right. But as a...
Fear-based is where you came from?
Well, I think that was my biggest flaw in my first go-round as a fiercely independent. And that's, we use that a lot, but that's kind of in-house. I take no offense, but I am a pretty independent woman that I kind of had a, ah, shit, if it doesn't work out, I've got an escape hatch. I thought I would land on my feet.
From day one, you had that.
Yeah, and that's horrific setup foundation-wise. Wow. And so, yeah, perhaps for another time. But I do think that fear, like if I had been honest with myself and say, let's just ride this wave and continue to enjoy others' company, but in this moment, something doesn't feel exactly right. So we got married a year later, and then we're married for four, and then it was time.
What do you think you were afraid of? Like in that moment when he proposes on the top of a mountain.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the feeling and image that comes to mind is like, oh, you know, the swirling tornado of like outside expectations. Because like he was great, smart, tall, handsome, successful. Like we lived this magical, traveling, a little around the world, globetrotting dream little life.
Right.
I require a lot of fun in a captive audience. And so it was, your question was, why do I think I let the fear win? Because it was why I didn't have a good enough reason to get out. I wasn't brave enough. So lying to yourself is a big one, and a struggle I'm still working on is fibbing to myself a little bit. And I was like, this could work. Like, I'm willing to work at it. And we did this stuff, but it was like, we aren't right together.
Right.
And that was an impossible task. So
that's so interesting. And what I'm hearing from you is that like fear can be healthy. Like,
sure.
To be honest, when we got married, of course, there's a little anxiety. There's a little bit of that healthy fear. And it's really hard to tell the difference between when it's a healthy avenue of fear and when it's not. And for me, in situations like that, like what I was trying to sort of see if you were going to allude to is like, I'm a people pleaser to a fault. And like, if I were in the same situation you were in explaining that, my fear would be 100% based around hurting the other person's feelings.
Right. You know that was part of the tornado. Absolutely. Imagine this man toting this ring and bag of champagne and picnic to the top of the mountain. I'm like, deuces.
Right.
Like, not a thing. Yeah.
Tough. That's a really tough one.
Right. Because you're right. The people-pleasing nature. I am. Funny little offshoot, but I think it's hilarious that I hear the story often that your dad literally proposed to like every girlfriend he ever had. He's like, let's lock this down. And so, yeah, I see in that moment. And yeah, it's funny that, yeah, look at my first engagement. And then here we are. We're on our second date and I propose on a whim to JT because I sniffed. It was like that moment. And I'm like, this is what my future is. No exit, escape hatch, anything of that sort.
Right.
Rules to the wind, full on intuition moment. Complete 180. So back to your healthy fear, people pleasing. Do you think there's a spectrum of that? Because people pleasing is a topic that I look forward to hearing more thoughts on. But in terms of fear, that is a dangerous game to play.
Well, yeah. And for me, I think people pleasing and fear go so hand in hand. When I look at that quote that I threw out there, Maya Angelou is really creating a contrast between what hope and fear. And really, the unhealthy kind of fear, the way that I would describe it, this is a non-professional, this is my personal sort of mantra moving forward, is that when fear overshadows your hope, that's when it becomes unhealthy. But when fear encourages your hope, you know, when that healthy
fear is a motivator,
when it's a motivator, I think it's a very healthy thing. And if you think about how our body processes these things, like the amygdala, it's been a huge topic of conversation from trauma and trauma-informed care, that if your amygdala, that's your smoke detector, that's the way I always like to put it, it's going to perceive threats. And then your body's going to react and you're going to go into fight or flight if that threat is perceived as real danger, right? If your amygdala is overactive and you always think that you're in this fearful, dangerous position, you're in what's called toxic stress. And you know what happens in that situation? Your brain shuts down. You cannot think, you cannot learn. And then what? You're overwhelmed by fear. That's what happens. And you're incapable of anything. It has completely overshadowed hope.
Right.
Right? And that's when we get into that troublesome area and what fear can do for us. Like, I can think about times in my life. You know this story, but I played football. I had opportunities to play at the next level in college when I was a teenager. And the real offer that I had to play Division I, big deal, was at an Ivy League school. And that terrified me. Growing up dyslexic, 8 straight years of
you're like after school remedial reading. Yeah. Straight to the Ivy Leagues. Yeah. Oh, man.
And so I didn't go. And it was
solely
100% because I was scared.
Scared of getting them grades.
Yeah.
Oof.
You know, I didn't think. Here's what I thought. When I was a teenager, I was like, oh, if I go to a regular school, a football powerhouse, something like that, school comes second. If I go to the Ivy Leagues, school's
first.
They're
going to need you to perform.
Yeah. I'm not going to get that personal tutor helping me through my classes. And so.
Which is probably incorrect.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, now that I'm.
So you will probably have a team of tutors. Yes.
And so that's one of the only situations that I look back in my life and go, man, I made that decision based on my own personal fear.
And I'm about to call you out right
well,
here.
Well, what I'm about to say is other decisions that I made that were fear-based were almost always people-pleaser. I made that decision because I was scared. I was fearful of disappointing or hurting someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep. I'm just circling back to that was a hard no on the Ivy League. This is going to be tough. And a yes, I'm going to follow the girl that kind of is breaking up with me or broke up with me yesterday or is tomorrow.
No, that definitely happened too.
Bummer.
Yeah.
But hey, glad you're here. You had an amazing college experience. But that is a, yeah.
I think the way I worded it in our writing was, when we finally broke up after we graduated from the college, I followed her too.
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> That's how I'm remembering it.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you for being brave because that is a really humbling, hard one to.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in your opinion, what do you think healthy fear is? And is there a way that that negative really bog you down, make you go into fight or flight negative fear has affected your life? And are those different to you? Like, do you have that same sort of contrast that I feel?
I think you've got a clear definition. I'm so, as we will recognize often, that you are very in tune and can articulate. Because I describe things as tornado or colors sometimes. The dormant volcano that is. So I definitely think I can relate where there is a lot of, I am in a uniquely very fulfilling but codependent relationship with my divorced parents.
Okay.
And there are things that it's not, there is fear, you know, and yeah, that anticipation of, yeah, where I want to be there for them and also maintain individuality and live my life. And we are very, very close. And so I think that sometimes I'm scared of squandering my minutes, which sounds crazy because I'm not putting that at all in the direction of that particular relationship. Mm-hmm. But I think that, yeah, my scare tactic seems very when I catch myself being really future based. And so if I rein it in, I think this the fear in that capacity of horrifying, people-pleasing. But yeah, we are to a detriment more willing. That whole practicing saying no seems to keep.
The art of saying no, I've heard it talked about a million times. But mm-hmm. I think that people who need practice in being able to hold their boundaries like that and say no are people like you and I who struggle with the people-pleasing aspect. Like,
mm-hmm. The fear of this relationship will be jeopardized and you won't like me as much, or I won't get invited next time, or
right.
whatever, which is so silly. And so.
Or this person's going to think that I'm a lunatic or, you know, hate me forever.
Right,
something
exactly.
Something along those lines.
And again, when we're like, are those your people? When you really think about it. But yes, so I feel like fear-based, we also probably should address that we both used alcohol as a crutch.
Oh, big time.
And so there's a phase there that how did fear play into that alcoholic mindset of, yeah, did that squash all your worries just like you planned?
Right.
How did booze play in?
That's a really interesting fact, and it makes me think of a quote I actually learned in the rooms of AA. And it's, you've heard me say it a million times, but if you've got 1 foot in the future and 1 foot in the past, you're peeing all over today. And the reason that makes me
graceful think, rooms. That's actually a pretty great glimpse of many. I love it.
And I even cleaned up some of that language for you. But the reason I think that ties to fear is I think stress and anxiety are so heavily tied into fear, at least for me. Mm-hmm. Like stress and fear are almost one and the same. And what that statement that AA is using from a mental capacity, they're really saying that if you're focused on the future, you're stressed out, right? If you're focused on the past, you're anxious.
Right.
And that's really interesting to me moving forward. Like in the spectrum of fear, my fear is usually about what is about to happen, right? And that's something I can't control. And it's such a huge part of alcoholism. And so my drinking a lot of times was to mitigate, you know, that's get me on a better wavelength, that stress and that fear that I had of what was coming up. And my heaviest drinking days were through my divorce, where I found myself without a place to live. And it was a really tough situation. And so
right, it was you used a way it as a coping in dark times.
It was my answer. It was my solution. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you're going to hear a lot in addiction and recovery conversations is, you need to find a new solution because the one you have is just masking, and that problem is doing push-ups when you're not working. I mean, that's when you're not looking. So,
right. And I'm going to next level you here with that stress kind of pool. I'm going to take it to the basics of sleep.
Oh, yeah?
Like all of that fear and the power and control that it has, I would argue, is heavily tied to healthy sleep habits, because that waking up in the middle of the night, fear-based often, the getting back to sleep, like I need to do more research, but I'm very curious because, yeah, when you feel well-slept, I also think that working out, having that whatever chemical cocktail that throws out in your body, but interesting. And I think it is fascinating, too, that you drink, as you said, like, yeah, I need a place to live, scary storage unit time, and my drinking was like perpetual celebration. And if it was like, oh, I have this speaking engagement, I'm nervous and excited and anxious, I'm just going to drink to cruise right on through that. And then sadly, the cost there is memories, cloudy.
Yeah.
Black holes of time. And so, but yeah, I was a happy up, but I missed it all.
So what an awesome conversation. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit and just, you know, speak from your heart and tell me what really you think makes a difference. But we've had an amazing conversation about decisions we've made with fear. In your maturity, as you've grown up, like, what is the solution? What do you do to combat that unhealthy fear and make sure that it stays in that healthy realm where you can manage it, use it as a motivator, almost use it as a tool? Are there strategies and things that you do to help manage that?
Well, you first said maturity, and I kind of
I think a lot of it comes with maturity, don't you?
I am, yes. The calendar has flipped, and I'm on my way. I'm there. But I do think this helps. My number one tactic would be digging into shit with the people that I feel safe, supported, that I can trust with being just caustically honest with,
sure,
and let them know the real deep down feels. That does help, because a little outside perspective. And, you know, I am so lucky. I reference those parents that I have an unwavering support system that I'm like, hey, I'm going to live this creative life in the woods and propose to this big boy on the second date. And they're like, that seems right. That seems right, yeah, babe. Do yeah. you? And so talk to your people. That's the biggest help for me. What about you?
So what I've realized as I've gotten older, and it really does come with some maturity for me, and it's probably why I had that, you know, not slip of the tongue, but threw that into the conversation. What I've realized in my life is that the fear that I carry, the worry in my mind, the stress that lives in my head is always 100 times worse than the actual event. And so talking about it like this is huge. That's why we even have this platform, is we want to have the conversations that kind of mitigate this toxic stress and fear that can live inside you. But the active thing that I can do, what I can do all the time, is I focus on putting myself in that situation. So I'm scared.
Visualize.
Well, I visualize, but also if I can have the realization right now with you, I need to be able to do it in the moment when I'm about to go do something that I'm afraid of, that I'm scared of. Because 90% of the time, it's nowhere near as bad as it was in my head.
Maybe 95. I'm with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what I do, is I sort of sack up, which is super hard, and then go do it. And
in your Care Bear suit.
And there's only been a handful of times in my entire life where it's been as bad as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And so that's just something that you, I guess, you learn with experience. But if you can have that awareness before you are about to do something that causes that stress and that fear, you're going to approach it with a different approach of, yes, this makes me scared. And I'll even say that when I have a speaking engagement or I needed to go lead a group of teenagers, I would start with, hey, guys, I'm a little nervous.
Love it.
And immediately people are going to like come to you and help you with that situation. So.
Well played.
Yeah, fear's a tough one. And it's one of those things you just got to attack and go for. And
right, exactly, where I'm like, man, it's like all of our heroes are out there tackling fears. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they overcame some stuff. And so I think we have to give like shout out, like I've just channeled, I'm like, man, just get your Simone Biles on. Like,
yeah,
talk
right.
about fear-based. Be like, hey, girl, here's what we're going to need you to do.
It's hilarious. One of the quotes I was looking at in preparation for this was a Simone Biles quote.
Oh.
Yeah, when I'm afraid, I go 1, 2, 3 and go for it. I'm pretty sure that's what the quote said. Paraphrasing a little bit.
See, Simone, shout out. Thank you for chatting with me
today. Of course, great conversation. Thank you all for coming by and checking out Let's Dig Into That's podcast. Please come back and see us. Thanks, guys.
Until next time.
I'm JT.
I'm Jordan.